Wham! Bam! Body slam! You're listening to My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, right here on JitteryMonkey.com. Now here's your host, Kevin Huntsberger.
Hey everyone, thanks again for tuning in to My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast. I'm recording this before the Fastlane pay-per-view. You can read our thoughts and opinions on it on my123cents.com, though, post-show. But my initial thoughts just on the card itself, I think they're doing a lot of matches that could be and should be saved for WrestleMania. So WrestleMania has kind of that new match vibe and feel, including the Rusev versus John Cena match, the Goldust versus Stardust match, and also the Intercontinental title match between Wade Barrett and Dean Ambrose. Again, I don't know, obviously, what happened as I am recording this prior to the pay-per-view, but we'll share thoughts and opinions on that over at my123cents.com, also over on Facebook. But I want to talk about today's show, which is an interview with one of my wrestling friends from my days doing independent wrestling with All American Pro Wrestling, doing commentary over there, a guy by the name of Poker Face, who folks in the Mid-South area will know very well. He has worked a lot of shows in Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi, and even into Illinois and Missouri and beyond. We talk about everything, including the Hall of Fame, the Mid-South Coliseum, the push to save the Coliseum, and the recent lawsuit filed by Cassandra Frazier, who is the widow of Big Daddy V, Viscera, King Mabel, etc. And you can read my thoughts as I go more in depth on my thoughts on that and the other lawsuits going on with WWE right now, including the one between the doctor who treated CM Punk. His name just escaped me for the moment. But anyway, I have all those thoughts and opinions located over at my123cents.com. So without any further ado, here is Poker Face.
I'm doing just great. Thanks for having me on, Kevin.
Now, for fans who may not be familiar with your work, tell us a little bit about who is Poker Face.
Well, okay, then. You got about another 5 hours, you know, my name is Quentin Williams, but everybody calls me Poker Face or Poker. I've been wrestling for the good part of almost 18 years. I was originally trained, I started my training at the United States Wrestling Association in Tennessee, up in Nashville. Then from that point on, I guess you could say Motley Crue's and Tonsa Simone pretty much smoothed out my rough edges and kind of like started over from scratch with me and kind of, you know, for the most part, got me to the point where I am now. And I've had the opportunity of working on some of the most, I guess, knowledgeable people in this business, for instance, like Rodney Mack. I mean, a guy that I think probably next to me has probably the most passion, you know, that I've seen anybody in the wrestling business.
Tell me a little bit about that passion. What motivated you so long ago to get involved in this? Because I am friends with you on Facebook and follow you on Twitter, and you are one of those guys, like you said, you have that passion, and it's very obvious. And talking to you and seeing you around, I think the fans pick up on that as well. So where did that all come from?
Honestly, I mean, as a kid, you know, and I hate to, you know, sound cliche, you know, and say, okay, you know, it was a childhood dream, and all, like most guys that you ask the same question of, but, you know, that's pretty much what it was. But originally, I wasn't, you know, on Saturday mornings in Memphis, you know, the big thing was, you know, you had Channel 5 Studio Wrestling, you know, with Jerry Lawler, you had Bill Dundee, you had Austin Idol, the Fabulous Ones, and all that. And from 11 o'clock on Saturday afternoons to 12:30 p.m., I mean, that was like, you know, the thing to watch. And, you know, this area, and my granddad, he was like obsessed with it. You know, and at that time, I wasn't quite a wrestling fan. I wanted to watch cartoons. And I had a cousin that's a little younger than me. He was into wrestling. So I kind of like came along afterwards. And my granddad was the first person that ever took me to, I guess really the only person that ever took me to a wrestling event at the Mid-South Coliseum. And I guess for the most part, I think I was kind of hooked from that point on. So then, you know, I kind of like, you know, pushed the cartoons to the side on Saturday mornings, and I was glued, you know, right along with my granddad, you know, on Saturday mornings, and I'd watch it, you know, and then we go off at 12:30, you know, me and my cousins, whichever cousin that was over at the time, we go either in the, you know, back room and start wrestling on beds, or we go in the backyard and start roughhousing, and the passion passion grew more and more, you know, as time went on. The passion just, I mean, just sprouted. And I always wanted to do it, but I was, you know, and I, you, like I said, you follow me on Facebook and Twitter. You know, and I'm a very competitive guy. I compete against people, you know, that don't necessarily know that I'm competing against them. But I was always a smaller guy, and I'm pretty sure you can relate to that too. You know, Ken, we're both kind of, for the most part, small frame guys.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I always knew that people probably doubted me and thought that, you know, I would never be able to make it in wrestling. And when I first started, you know, guys, you know, my size, pretty much just like, you know, referees. You know, you had very few exceptions. Like JCI, Sammy Dundee, and PG-13, but for the most part, you know, guys under 200 pounds, you were kind of, you know, only job that you could really get into, you know, wrestling was, you know, either ring crew or referee, but I always stuck with it, and I was blessed to, you know, start a place, OCL Arkansas, which is my my hometown, by the way, and the late Moondog Spot, who was, you know, former WWE, one half WWF tag team champions, you know, he gave me my first break. And from that point on, you know, I kept coming back every week, and I was taking the bumps and the bruises, you know, and it's something I was, you know, that I wanted to do, and I couldn't even when I graduated from high school, you know, I tried college, but, you know, it was personal circumstances and my passion for wrestling. I didn't want to do anything else. You know, looking back now, I probably would have, you know, maybe finish college or whatever, because I thought, okay, well, if I didn't wrestle right now, try to wrestle right now, then it would pass me by. You know, and looking back, you know, I wish I had stuck with it, but I passed up, you know, just by me not being focused on, you know, college and, you know, continuing my education. I was, you know, I passed up like an internship at a marketing firm, you know, and a whole lot of other stuff, you know, but wrestling is what I want to do. I've given up so much. And I made a point, you know, and I've always chosen wrestling over everything. You know, I never really officially started a family because I know once you become a family man, and I know you can attest to this, you know, your priorities have to shift if you're a good man.
Right.
If you're a horrible man, your priorities have to shift. It's not all about you anymore. It's about the family, you know. So, and I knew that was a sacrifice I would have to make if I became a family man and got married, you know, had a bunch of kids, and I didn't want to do that. So, I never even gotten close to, you know, getting married. And I have a son, you know, and he stays in Florida now, but, you know, he came after I had been in the business a while, and I was still able to kind of, like, balance that out. I was always there, you know, for his, you know, and I'm glad, you know, at the time when I thought I should have been signed to WWE, I'm blessed that I wasn't, because of the fact, you know, if I had been signed when I thought I would have, when I thought I should have, I would have missed his first haircut, his first words, his first, you know, day in school, and I was able to be there for that. You know, so, and looking back, I never got signed, but I've had an opportunity to, you know, make appearances on WWE TV, you know, so I've gotten the taste of the big time, and it tastes very sweet, and now I wouldn't totally rule it out now, even though I've been in the business as long as I have. I'm still, for the most part, I'm healthy, and I'm probably in the ring, and, you know, better now than I was, you know, maybe 10 years ago, you know, so. I know it's kind of a drawn out story on that, though, but, you know,
no.
Kind of, you'll come from deep inside.
Sure, and I appreciate you being so open and honest and sharing that. And tell me, because when I was a kid, I remember watching the Moondogs, and of course, Jamie Dundee's dad, the superstar Bill Dundee, and Jerry the King Lawler, and those guys. What was it like, because I imagine you watched them too, as they've been around for quite some time. What was it like watching them on TV and then actually learning from them, becoming peers, and actually wrestling with them, and not just being a fan?
It was very surreal, to be honest, because I never thought, even as a kid, because I used to, the high school that Jerry Lawler attended when he was, you know, younger, he used to, on Sundays, nearby Wipes State, he'd come out there, you know, and everybody knows Jerry Lawler, knows he's, you know, he's a softball lover, you know, and he had his own team called the King's Army. You know, so every Sunday he'd come out there to that high school baseball field play. So I'd go over there, you know, and my mom, my aunt, whoever was at the house at the time, would take me over there and I'd shake his hand. That was a big deal for me, and I never would have thunk it. Yeah, I'm going kind of a slang here. I never would have thunk it, you know, that, you know, so many years later that I'd be going, you know, face to face with him. You know, and like, you know, and also, and one thing I can say, even though I've never gotten signed by the WWE, I have no regrets, because everybody that I've watched coming up, for the most part, I've either met, I'll either tag with them or I'll face them. You know, and you can't, I mean, because back in the day, you know, most kids nowadays, their heroes are, you know, anybody that WWE produces, like Hulk Hogan, you know, John Cena, The Rock. When I was a kid, you know, Lawler was my, you know, my Hulk Hogan, because, you know, I didn't see a lot of WWE program back then. And as I got into the business, you know, facing off against the likes of, you know, Moondogs. You know, I was obsessed with the Moondogs when I was in high school. You know, Bill Dundee, Brickhouse Brown, Tracy Smothers, you know, Handsome Jimmy Valiant. I've met the Bushwhackers. You name it, from like the old school, a lot of guys I've met. Matter of fact, just as of recently, I was on a wrestling event in Oklahoma, Mississippi, you know, and, you know, shared the same dressing room as Robert Gibson, which of the Rock and Roll Express, which I've met Robert, you know, I've known him, quote unquote, you know, for like years, so it wasn't the first time that I met him, but I still, you know, I'm honored to see him be, you know, sitting in the same room and breathing the same air as they do. You know, and they've always been super nice for the most part. Dundee, I love him. Bill Dundee has to be one of the guys that you got to really know, because he shoots straight from the hip. And when I first met him, I wasn't used to him. I like, you know, Dundee, he'll tell you how it is, you know, and he won't sugarcoat it. And, you know, at the time, I was young in the business, and I'm like, who's this butthole right here? I never said it to him, you know, but as years went on, and, you know, and you probably kind of got a glimpse out of his business, and you have too many, you know, so many toothpaste of people. And Bill didn't say it. Bill told you, you know, and he still to this day tells you how it is, whether you agree with it or not. I don't care. This is how it is. Live with it. And I can respect and I love him to death for that right now.
Yeah, he is one of those constants that is still wrestling today, along with Jerry the King Lawler, like you mentioned. Do you know, obviously there's been an evolution in the world of professional wrestling from when you started and back with USWA, and things have evolved and kind of everything's gone to WWE, and now for the last few years we've seen other companies crop up, but there's almost a resurgence, or maybe I'm just more aware of it as a fan, that there's more indie wrestling out there and available. Do you see that as well? Is there a resurgence of independent wrestling? Are you wrestling for a lot of different companies right now, or what's your schedule like?
Well, I'm not on the road like I used to, because like maybe back in the early 2000s, my group, NXN, Naughty by Nature, we would travel to Illinois quite often, once, twice a month, you know, and do a couple of shots for TV up there. And we would travel, you know, to Texas as well, Kentucky, Louisiana. And like now, it is like a, and you know, you open up a can of worms, but you know how my post goes on Facebook about the independent companies. So, but I'm, you know, you ask, I'm going to tell you, I mean, yes, it's been a resurgence, but I wouldn't exactly call them companies, because I don't wrestle a lot of companies now, because of the fact you have people who are at the reins that don't know what they're doing. They're not businessmen. And the area I stay in, and now I live in Memphis, and now along, you know, surrounding towns of Memphis, I guess within 150 miles of Memphis, we have almost for the good part, and I know you saw my video earlier, we have probably like almost like 10 different promotions running. Wow. I don't call them companies, I call them promotions, because nowadays you can just get on any website and, you know, order a restaurant, rent a building, you know, boom, somebody calls and refers to themselves as a promoter. And for the most part, you know, you got guys here, you know, a new breed of guys coming in, number one, who weren't taught the respect for the business, and then they weren't trained properly, you know, and it's like now, in the area that I'm in, you have so many promoters running like almost like next door to each other. Like here in Memphis alone, we have one, two, maybe like three, and I heard about another fourth one going to start running.
Wow.
In Memphis, yes. You know, and it's like, you know, and the difference, I think, between the promoters of today and the promoters of yesteryear, for the most part, nobody eats off of wrestling anymore. You know, it's like a paid hobby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to a certain point, that you're not going to probably work as hard as if you would, if, you know, that was your only means of support, and that was the only way that you're going to eat, and that was the only way that you're going to pay your mortgage bill, the only way that you're going to, you know, pay your car note, the only way you're going to put your kids to school. And so, like, now it's a paid hobby that you have, basically have idiots running it, and I've seen it, you know, and I've had guys approach me, they're like, hey, you know, you want to come, you know, here in Memphis? Well, you know, for the most, you know, I've, you know, in over the last couple of years, I've gotten more, I've been put in positions where I was in charge for the number two guy, being a booker. So when I book, you know, a lot of guys have had problems where I have a business when it comes to wrestling. Now, like some people might think I'm a butthole. I say I'm just very passionate about what I do, and I knew how I was brought in to respect the business, and I expect nothing less from anybody else. And if nothing else, I'll try to work harder than the guys who have wrestled for me. You know, and then a lot of guys, they want to be catered to, and they're like prima donna, and I don't play that. You know, when I'm in charge and I'm booking, I don't do the buddy system. Yeah, I mean, just because, you know, I may go have a drink with you, or, you know, we've known each other a long time, that means absolutely nothing to me, because when I'm in an authority position, that's my job, because if things don't run right, then they're not going to look at the wrestlers. They're going to, you know, whoever's my boss is going to come to me, then I get replaced.
Right.
You know, so I expect nothing. I expect 110% from everyone. I mean, from the top to the bottom, even the referees, and guys can have a problem with me. You know, but they'll never say it to my face, because if I'm very vocal. I'm like, I consider my, I'm not quite as bad as Jim Cornette is, but I'm, when things don't go right, or I think guys are just falling in the end, I make it very known. You know, and I fear nobody, you know, and I like, you know, and I'll keep it as a verbal talk, you know, a verbal reprimand, and if they want to take it a step further, which they too many guys are willing to do that with me, you know, then we can take it there. But I try to keep it at least on a non-physical level when it comes to reprimanding them. But like I said, there's so many, it is a resurgence of the independent level, independent wrestling here, but none, I mean, maybe... It may be like one in the area that if I really had anything else to do, that I would consider doing, you know, a match for. But they had to catch me on a really good day, and I'd have been a really good move for me to say yes. Other than that, if somebody hires me, for the most part, I'm not going to act right, because I'm used to, you know, things, you know, being ran a certain way when I run. I mean, and which is, you know, we start on time. Everybody knows the time limits and the matches, you know, it's like, you know, you can't just give guys out there, they go what you do, and the first match goes, you know, 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give time and set some, you know, boundaries, some parameters. And for the most part, you know, a lot of guys are afraid to do it, or they don't want to step on any toes or make anybody mad. Where if you have a guy like me, I don't care, and I tell you, I don't care. You know, but I do, and when I do, rest for other companies, I do respect it. I might, you know, they might say one thing and I might not agree with it in my, you know, in my head, but I respect them like how I want to be respected. And it is even recently I worked, I wrestled for a company in Clarksdale, Mississippi, and they drew very well. Matter of fact, I'll tag you in the video a little bit later on Facebook, and they draw, I know, anywhere to 300 to 500, so it was a great crowd, the money's great, I sold tons of merchandise, but it wasn't ran properly. And it wasn't just me, you know, being stubborn and, you know, setting my ways. It just, you know, the promoter pretty much would center, you know, and I've been accused of this myself, but center, you know, things around what it was that he was doing. It made no sense, you know, and, you know, for the most part, majority of the guys on the wrestling event didn't look professional. They didn't look the part, and they were the only guys that probably never wrestled outside of the town. You know, and like I say, and it's not all about money with me. You know, money is fine. I do want to get paid and paid well for what I do. But if there's no passion behind the guy, you know, with the guy that's running it, that's owning it, then I'd rather not be there. You know, because I respect, you know, to me, in most cases, passion would trump money any day. And I've quit other companies because of it, because the guy that was running didn't have passion, didn't care. Now, so why do I want to be around somebody who doesn't care about what they do? You know, so if they don't care about something they're putting money into, they don't care, you know, nothing about me. And that's why I go back to Rodney Matt, and he was, I mean, extremely passionate. Sometimes I thought it was passing to a fault, you know, because he was like, you know, probably still is in love with the business. And I'm not saying this, you know, kiss his butt, but he was like, you know, times made him talk, and I was like, man, I mean, that's what drew me close to him. When we had some hard-fought battles, but, I mean, I'm like, seriously, you know, but that's one thing I respected about him. He, you know, the way I demand, you know, 110% out of people who wrestle with me, he demands the same thing. And that's what I really picked up on there. You know, and he demanded nothing but the best. And, you know, and we expect, you know, I was in one particular company that he was over, I would be considered the number two guy. You know, because of my season, I was like, you know, of course, traveling and getting around, I was probably only second to him. And so when he wasn't there, I was in charge, you know, and I expected, you know, the most, I expected enough guys, to respect me like they would if he was there. I didn't have a problem with that because they knew he was the boss. You know, then we had a crew that put in, you know, everything they had and helped out. I mean, without even asking a lot of times, because even that particular company, that was one company that I was wrestling with Rodney and with. When I first joined the company, it was drawing maybe like 60, 70 people. And within maybe 6 months, it rose to 400. And, you know, being a part of that, you know, is jaw-dropping. And it came from, it wasn't enough for just one person who did it. It was just a collective effort, you know, from everybody, all the wrestlers, all the trainees, everybody pitched in for everything. And so, you know, and if there was ever an attitude problem, you know, hey, you know, it was pretty sick real fast, and we didn't expect everybody to like each other, but you're going to get along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you couldn't get along, then you had to leave. You know, plain and simple. No, there's no democracy on that, no voting, and that is how it was. So.
Makes a lot of sense. And so tell me, with the sudden popularity of the WWE Network with NXT and the Performance Center, do you see that as something that is good for the business in terms of giving guys who are on the independent scene maybe an opportunity beyond TNA or Ring of Honor and maybe eventually make it in then to the big leagues, if you will, of the WWE?
Well, the thing is with that, and I was just thinking about that the other day, and I guess it's like a double-edged sword. I mean, it's good for the guys, because they've learned pretty much every aspect of the business, from, you know, the television production to the announcing, you know, to the in-ring product. But if you look at it like this, and I tell people, it's not me bragging, but it's the actual truth. I studied wrestling. I mean, as far as, you know, how it was done, you know, for us, you know, how I came across on TV in the heyday, you know, and what, in the times that they were doing, have the building sell out. Now, things have changed over the last 20 years, but certain principles can still be applied. And you look at the guys who were big money makers in wrestling. You got guys like, you know, Steve Austin. You got guys like The Rock, Hulk Hogan. And even Cena to a certain point. These guys, at the time, it was still, well, I guess for the most part, when Cena was around, and maybe The Rock, too, when it first came around, you know, the territories, for the most part, were dead. But the guys who were big money makers, they had the opportunity to travel to different areas and learn the craft and start. I mean, and guys are getting signed. Now, I'm not knocking it, you know what I'm saying? I mean, because, you know, evidently something's working because, they're almost like a billion-dollar-a-year company. So I'm not knocking it. But I think in the long run, you know, it might be on a downward slope when it comes to the wrestling business. And you look at it, like I said, Stone Cold, he starved. And you look at, well, I mean, you can apply it to, you know, wrestlers who made it or these big executives like Bill Gates, where a lot of times people who starved, they were in fear of starving, that they worked hard to get to where they wanted. You know, so Stone Cold survived on tuna and raw potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brickhouse Brown was telling that story back in the day when Steve Austin was studying Steve Austin, how when they were doing what they call it, Memphis Lube, they would be up in Nashville, and Brickhouse said he'd invite, you know, Steve Austin and some of the other guys over to the house, and his wife, you know, would cook for him. You know, when they were in Nashville, you know, and you guys like Mick Foley traveled around, he slept in his car, and a lot of guys, even, you know, me, so to speak, you know, I've driven places, I've, you know, driven, you know, 6-7 hours, and I got paid a dime, was lucky to get a hotel room, and I kind of lucked up on that. You know, so I think for the most part, guys need to kind of starve a little bit, so then when they do get, you know, a taste of the good life, you know, then they're gonna claw a little bit harder to stay up there, where, you know, you just automatically get signed, you know, and you're getting, you know, you're getting guaranteed money, you know, even though, you know, developmental doesn't mean that you're gonna go to the main roster, but you're not starving for the most part. You're not struggling.
Yeah.
You know, I've been, you know, times when I didn't know how I was gonna pay this bill or not. So when I start, you know, getting on the, you know, to the point where I was, you know, making more money and stuff, you know, okay, I'm gonna work a little bit harder because of the fact I don't wanna, you know, scratching my head at the end of the month, how am I gonna pay my rent, how am I gonna pay my car note, how am I gonna pay my insurance. So in that aspect though, that's why I think the NXT thing can be kind of detrimental, but that just, you know, I guess time will tell. You know, but in my personal opinion, you know, I think it I don't think it's going to devastate the business, but I don't think it's going to be exactly beneficial to the business either.
Yeah, you know, you make some very, very good points about, you know, that struggle, if you will, that perseverance that weeded out the weak from the strong, where, you know, you were on the road for 300 days a year, and you were sleeping on a floor in a hotel room, or you were piling six or eight guys in a car and going from town to town. So we're not seeing that, I guess, like we used to, and it's definitely a lot of things have changed over the last decade or so since Vince McMahon has kind of had this chokehold or headlock on the wrestling business in general. Do you have any particular favorite matches or anything that kind of stands out to you through the years that you have been in the ring? And if so, who kind of comes to your mind as maybe a favorite opponent, a favorite memory, or a favorite match?
Well, my favorite opponent, if I want to go strictly by in-ring competition and not for star power, I would say, honestly, I'm not saying this because he was my tag team partner, but my tag team partner, Ruler of Naughty by Nature, and another guy in this area who I've known, you know, for a long time, all that Adam Steele. And I would say, that, you know, in Forrest, I mean, these guys are like, I mean, and, you know, I'm very physical in the ring, you know, but these guys are like stunning. I mean, and I promise you, my son are very brutal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, but the fans are drawn into it. They don't, you know, a lot of guys may wrestle these days. This is, I tell people, this is separates me from most wrestlers. Okay. Most wrestlers these days, they go and they're aiming for the ooh factor from the fans. When I wrestle, I go for the whole crap, but you know the expletive I'm trying to go for.
Sure.
I'm looking for that when I'm in step in the ring. You know, and that's for the most part, that's, you know, because when I, you know, just not somebody, okay, hey, I had to wrestle, and I would love to wrestle the guy, you know, and, you know, as long as I've been in it at a certain point, you know, I would, you know, if I had to, anybody that I wanted to wrestle, probably like maybe like William Regal or somebody like Fit Finley, you know, guys that I know are very, you know, and I'll probably come, you know, come back with some missing teeth, you know, but I kind of like, you know, dig that kind of thing. You know, but for the most part, I don't have, you know, like I said, Alan Steele and my partner, Rue, they're probably my two favorites, that, you know, on the independent level. And I can say, as far as my connection, I tend to learn things not necessarily in the ring, but also outside of, like, I've been on, you know, just talking for hours with Sid Vicious, you know, and people, you know, a lot of times don't get Sid his due, and Sid is Sid, you know, and Sid can be, you know, a handful to deal with, though, but for, you know, mind for just the business, the behind-the-scenes business, she's a genius, in my opinion. And so he taught me about that, you know, he would tell me about, you know, the money he would make, you know, WWE, WCW, and the importance of saving. You know, now, see, if does anything wrestling related now, it's because he wants to, it's because he has it. He just does it, and then he'll, you know, sometimes he gets the itch, somebody asks him, and he's in the right mood, he might say yes. And he does not, you know, feel it, he wants to go hunting. Guess what? He's like, well, he's gonna go hunting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he taught me the important, you know, the business end of it, and that's what I try to, you know, maybe relay to some of the younger talent that's coming in now that are humble enough to listen to me. You know, and for the most part, you know, and I don't know how much of experience you have in your area, but I know at least around here, that a lot of the, and I know Rudy Boy Gonzalez, I've seen some of his rants on Facebook about how the new breed of wrestlers, you know, have a sense of entitlement. You know, and it's like, you know, they don't want to pay the dues, or, and like, I did, as a matter of fact, it was maybe like last April, I did an event in, this was like outside of Selma, Tennessee, and there's a little young whippersnapper or whatever like that. He's been disrespectful to some other wrestlers. So I also happened to have a very bad day that day, and I didn't know that was my first time ever wrestling at this company. You know, so, but, you know, and you, like I said, you've seen some of my rants, so it didn't really take much to set me off. So when my close buddy that I rolled with, you know, he comes in, and mistakenly, you know, lets me, you know, find out about the guy being disrespectful. So I came to the guy and I chewed him. I chewed him out, but I didn't yell at him, mm-hmm. But I was very, you know, I'm a very strong talker. And he took it. He almost left. I mean, the guy wouldn't come back over to the area where I was sitting in. And, you know, then, of course, you know, when he told his side of the story, you know, he said that I said I was going to, you know, kick his butt away, which I never said that. But I told him, I said, if you go somewhere else with that attitude, somebody else is going to, you know, kick your butt. And yada, yada, yada. But, of course, you know how rumors are. You know, each time they pass from one person to the other, it gets twisted around. But, you know, I've run across it a lot. You know, guys having this sense of entitlement. And the next generation of wrestlers, I mean, I know we were talking about NXT earlier, but at least on the independent level, you know, I'm kind of worried about, because you got less, you know, when I started, there were a lot of veterans there, you know, that could, you know, just, you know, if I got out of pocket, you know, they could put me back in pocket, or I could sit underneath their learning tree and pick their brain, or just listen to tell stories and, you know, and apply to, you know, to future events, you know, and wrestling, you know, for myself. And like now, that's getting, you know, farther between for us, you know, actual veterans. You got a lot of guys now who, calendar wise, have maybe been in the business a long time, but they don't know anything. You know, they've set a ring up maybe 10 times ever, and all of a sudden, you know, they're grizzled veterans, they got a wrestling school open, they don't know crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what worries me, and that's what kind of, to a certain point, prompted me to start, you know, getting more. I don't consider myself a wrestling trainer. Most time when I work with guys, they've already been trained to a certain point, so I'm kind of like their tutor or their coach, so to speak. You know, so I teach them, like I got a group, like my partner trained them, they call themselves the Born Supremacy. And they, you know, my partner trained them, but he ended up having to have hip surgery, so they chose to stay underneath me and work for me in the town of Ripley, Tennessee. And so I would teach them, they always, you know, kind of rag on me a little bit. They're like, Pope, you talk more, you wrestle. I said, yeah, but I teach you just the business end of it. You know, I taught them the importance of marketing. I said, don't always depend on the money that you're going to get in the envelope, you know, at the end of the night. You know, because sometimes you won't get that money.
Yeah.
Well, if it's a low crowd, you might not get that money. So learn how to market yourself, you know. And so I, as a hobby, I'll screen print t-shirts and everything. So, you know, so I screen printed some t-shirts, and then I started getting pictures out there. You know, and a couple of girls that are on my wing, Nicole Bourne, which is their sister, and Danielle Williams, I had them get pictures, you know, and it was me and night, they outsold me in merchandise. You know, but I'm not the jealous type, because I was happy. I was like, the
sure.
Pop. I'm like, okay, well, listen to me, put money in their pockets, and of course, the more they sell, I ain't going to make more money, because then they come back to me to make more t-shirts and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a win-win situation, but I tell them, I teach them the marketing end of it, as well as how to save their bodies, you know, in the ring. You know, I don't take, you know, every now and then I'll take, you know, high risk or whatever, but I tell them how to wrestle smart, you know, because, yeah, you know, being reckless and doing a lot of crazy things in the ring looks good and gets a good response from the crowd, but you can only do it for so long, you know, until, you know, your body can't take it anymore. And if you're only used to wrestling a high risk style, you know, and say something happened where you're injured, or different times, you know, the ring, the ring is, you know, broken. I've been on events with, you know, the ring, you know, like a board popped up, there's a hole in the board, the top rope broke, you know, and so you got to actually learn how to wrestle. So I teach them how to be versatile, so you know how to wrestle, you know, a little of every style, almost like a jack of all trades when it comes to it, and how to save their body, how to wrestle smart, and not necessarily wrestling hard. Now, not wrestling hard doesn't mean, again, I'm not saying phone it in.
Right.
You know, with somebody to do, doing a corkscrew, this and that, and I don't want to sound like a, you know, grizzled old timer, but you know, I can do more with doing less. And I've learned that, and I've learned it from watching, you know, guys like Ricky Moore and, you know, Lawler. You know, I've even trained at Ken Wayne's school just to, you know, stay in shape. Nightmare Ken Wayne. You know, even though I've been doing this 18 years, I'm still learning. I still pick, you know, the veterans' brains. You know, I enjoy being, like a couple weeks ago, being in the locker room with, you know, Bill Dundee and Robert Gibson, you know, and for them to be able to lecture me and you know, and correct me on stuff, I love that. And with most guys, you tell them, you try to correct them, you know, they act like you cut them out.
Yeah.
Which I'm not past it, of course, you know.
Sure. Well, I mean, you're making a lot of great points. And when you wrestle, and I mentioned earlier in the introduction your match against Matt Cross, who, of course, was on Tough Enough and is now wrestling with Lucha Underground. That was during an event at All-American Pro Wrestling, which was one of our bigger events, but actually it was the biggest event that we did. But when you're at a bigger, higher profile event like a match like that with a, I don't want to use the word bigger name, but a big named wrestler, versus wrestling a show, and I've been to shows before where there's been a dozen people in the crowd, do you prepare, or does the crowd size influence the way you get in there and do your thing?
No, and because it goes back to, again, I was saying about four, you know, the being broke thing and struggling. I understand the value of a dollar. So even if there's only 12 people came, those 12 people, they could have done anything else with their money that night. Well, they chose to come and see me amongst others do what we do best. So I never shortchange them. Now, I feel like if I, you know, if say if it was one of those, you know, phases where I'm a little bit higher risk in my in-ring competition, okay, then I may, you know, at the crowd, you know, I never will kill myself. You know, sometimes, you know, what you might do in this match in front of 10,000, you might want to save it for something else for a bigger payday. And like I said, but it's not me phoning it in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the match against Matt Cross, at that time, I was at, you know, for his profession, I was at the crossroads because we all have our peaks and valleys. You know, I'm like, man, I don't think I got it anymore. You know, I'm not feeling it. Like, crowds that I connected with, you know, whatever like that. You know, so I'm like, you know, and I was on the verge is like, you know, kind of like, you know, taking a sabbatical or whatever. But that match kind of like recharged me. I'm like, okay, well, this is somebody whose, you know, style is completely different without wrestling in a while. I said, so I'm going to see how I fare for it, my condition. But, you know, because he, you know, wrestling, and especially guys up north, wrestle a faster pace versus what they consider the southern style of wrestling. So I'm like, okay, let me see. You know, it's easy for me to try to slow down the pace and wrestle my match. Let me see how I keep up with his match. And I kept up. I mean, I surprised myself.
Yeah, it was a great match.
I wasn't, you know, and for us, that was the biggest crowd that I had been in front of for, you know, AAPW. But I wasn't, you know, I wasn't exactly, like, nervous. I didn't, you know, I'm not the kind of guy that really, unless I'm, like, going through some personal problems, I never had to psych myself up. Because I tell people, I've had guys try to sell me on shows. Okay, yeah, we draw, you know, a couple hundred this, a couple hundred that. I wrestled, you know, with WWE back in 2003 on a dark match before Raw, you know, in front of 10,000 people. So it's like anything else other than that is less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when I walk out, so to me, wrestling in front of 500 people, well, it's almost like wrestling in front of 50 people. I approach it the same. I don't, you know, I may get butterflies here and there, but for the most part, it's second nature. A lot of people say, well, once you lose those butterflies, then you should hang your boots up. No, I don't get butterflies all the time because, again, I have so much passion for this. You know, it's really, I mean, it's like, to me, it's like driving the car. It's nothing. You know, I don't want to make it sound like I said, it's on cruise control, but yet sometimes, you know, what I do in such and such town, and I try to wrestle, try a certain moveset, and the next time doesn't always work, so I have to kind of like, you know, adjust as I go. You know, but I approach every match, no matter how big the crowd, how small, I approach it the same. Even if I hate the promoter, or I think he's a dummy, I will still always give people the money's worth, because I know I've been on the other end of that where I paid my money, you know, and I've watched wrestling matches before, and I was like, what the crap is this? You know, can I get a refund? And I don't ever want anybody, now they might say about the other matches on the card, but I don't want them to ever say that they ever saw Poker Face have a bad match. Or what was Poker Face doing? If it ever gets to that point, when I become that guy, or people just decide they want to go to the bathroom, the concession stand, when I get in the ring, then it's time for me to hang up my boots. Well, until then, you know, the way I look at it, I still got a lot of miles left on me.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I do miss seeing you on a monthly basis. And one of these days, I'm going to make it down to Tennessee. Now, something else that has come up recently here is a lawsuit filed by Cassandra Frazier, the widow of Nelson Frazier, who fans know as Big Daddy V, Viscera, King Mabel, from his time in WWE. I actually have posted a blog over at my123cents.com on this subject and a couple of other lawsuits going on. But, Poker, I know you kind of know, or did you work with Nelson Frazier at all in his time wrestling?
Just years ago, when I was wrestling in my hometown of Osceola, I had met him, and I think he was pretty much on his way, this was after him winning the King of the Ring and everything, and I think he was on his way back up to the WWE at the time, so it might have been around the time of the maybe of the corporate ministry lead up to that. And right before they, you know, made the transition of him being from Bell, going from Mabel to Viscera. And so I worked with him. Then I even after that, you know, around where I stayed, I've done some shows with him. And even up until maybe a couple of months before he passed, I had did a show where we brought in Fred the Hitman Hart to Humboldt, Tennessee. And it was kind of to bring Brett in and to help out. It was going to help out Certain Mold, which was Mabel's former tag partner. And it was also my tag partner. It was his, like, retirement match, his swan song, if you would. And so, you know, so that was, like, the last time that I saw him. And that's why it kind of made it kind of a little bit, you know, spooky for me, you know, like, so, you know, a couple months after that, then he passes or whatever. But, yes, I had an opportunity. We were cool. We weren't just, I never panned out, you know, that we talked on the phone all the time, but whatever. We saw each other. We, you know, sit around. We got through the fastest a little bit. Or, you know, if he was busy, you know, I was thinking, hey, brother, how you doing? And speak. So we were very cordial. And he was always, you know, very nice, you know, to me. And, you know, of course, you know, when I first met him, you know, this guy's been on WWE. So, of course, I was starstruck at the time. But, yeah, we were, like, so we were, you know, we had a, you know, fairly good business, you know, relationship. But we weren't kind of like, you know, close buddies or anything like that. Well, that's pretty much the relationship I've had with a lot of guys, you know, in professional wrestling.
So what is your take on the lawsuit, the wrongful death lawsuit that his widow has now filed?
Well, my thing is, and I had heard about it the other day. One of the guys that wrestles for me, he had texted me, you know, about it, and I'm like, what? You know, they hit some online, I guess maybe through some talk on Facebook. So I went and I got online myself and I looked at it. It's like 125 page deposition. But I didn't really go and look at that. But I looked at, you know, pretty much the synopsis of what the website said, what the lawsuit was about, you know, which, you know, was talking about, you know, him having old concussions or whatnot and, you know, scar tissue indentations in his head, that the WWE withheld information about his health concerning, you know, and to keep him the size that he was, you know, because he was a, you know, very large individual, and the WWE encouraged him to be that way, which, you know, and over time it became detrimental to his health. But my thing is, you know, and she's suing for wrongful death. And my thing is, you know, and I've touched on this with, I think, with you before and other people, you know, we know what we're doing when we step foot into the ring. We know the risk, and at any time, you know, if it gets too much for us, whether it's, you know, on independent wrestling scene or if it's WWE or TNA, we do have that option, number one, going to the person who's in charge, you know, tell them if we're not, you know, feeling good or if something we're not comfortable with, or simply just walking away, and he, you know, if that was the case, if he was doing something, you know, during his tenure at WWE that he wasn't comfortable with, then he, you know, it could have easily, you know, walked away or, you know, spoken with someone. And by WWE, especially now, you know, they're a publicly traded company. So I'm not saying everything's all, you know, grits and gravy, if you would, there. But I don't think they would be stupid enough to, you know, let, you know, anyone, you know, especially, you know, as big as he was, you know, because, you know, he can't have potential health risk to go, you know, and continue to compete in a, you know, in an unhealthy, you know, state. Because even, you know, there's been times they've encouraged larger wrestlers to lose weight. You know, for instance, I think, if I'm not mistaken, like Yokozuna. Yokozuna was the first one that pops in my head, so I couldn't really name anyone else. You know, so, and me, this is just me talking personally, and this has come from, you know, a podcast that I had heard before that she was on, maybe a month or two after his passing, where, you know, she was very candid, very colorful in her comments. And me personally, it seems that it's more of a way to get, you know, attention, to get media attention, especially, you know, you're going out to the WWE, you're going after the time, and a way to get money. And I think it's unjustified. I think, you know, if it was something along the lines, you know, then she's stating wrongful death. If it was something along the lines of the Owen Hart incident, mm-hmm. I can understand a little bit more, but it's not. And what she's, you know, from what the synopsis of what I heard about the lawsuit, what she's griping the most about had nothing to do, you know, with how he died. You know, so to me, it looks like, you know, she's just, you know, after money. You know, and I could be wrong, but just, you know, but you, you know, if you put stuff out there, then people are going to, you know, make, you know, come up with their own conclusion. But that's what it looks like to me, that she's just, you know, out for, you know, attention and trying to get a spotlight. You know, and I've heard, you know, other things because of the fact, you know, I'm here in the men's area where you stay. So, of course, I'm in the know when it comes to a lot of things, you know, and I can't, just to respect other people's privacy, certainly I can't speak on it. But that's the way it looks, you know, then my biggest thing is if, you know, if he was in that bad of health or he was that uncomfortable, you know, when he was still here on Earth with us, why is it that he didn't file a lawsuit against the WWE?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it can't be necessarily, in my opinion, you know, money thing, because if you go after a giant like that, you know, any lawyer would jump on it because there's nothing else there in the spotlight, you know. And so why is it that he didn't go, you know, after WWE himself? You know, and if he was injured any kind of way, WWE isn't the only company that he's wrestled for. Now, he wrestled, you know, here in Memphis. You know, we wrestled the same company here in Memphis years ago. You know, he was also in ECW. He was also in another local company that I think it was called Tradition Championship Wrestling or whatever. But he wrestled there, so an injury could happen any time. You know, again, you know, if it was that big of a deal or he was having that many problems, then why is it that he didn't sue WWE? Now, I'm not saying that, you know, that none of this was true, but again, when we stepped foot in the ring from day one, you know, it wasn't like he was a, you know, a sheltered rookie that WWE just hired, you know, training from scratch. He had kind of like, you know, been on the roads a little bit before they had even hired him, you know, I think back in the, you know, my mid and late 90s, you know, but he knew, we all know what we get into, you know, from day one of professional wrestling, you know, and if it got too bad, just walk away. CM Punk did, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, they walked away, and I know they're on two different levels when it comes to the, I guess, the latter WWE, but still, you had that option.
Yeah, that was my big problem with it, too, is the fact that he worked for other companies before and after his time in WWE, but of course WWE is the giant and the juggernaut and still standing, so to speak, and that's where the money is. So, you know, and I'm not alleging any nefarious activity by his widow either, but when you look at it from the outside, it does look kind of like a money grab going on here, or there's no one else to blame here, so I'm going to blame the WWE because they are so recognized and so known.
I mean, I don't know, like I say, it just say, you know, especially by, you know, like the podcast that she, you know, that she participated in, like I said, maybe shortly after his funeral. And I listened to it. It was, you know, very lengthy. I usually don't have that, you know, kind of patience. But I wanted, you know, by the fact that I knew him and, you know, other things that I was in a know and aware of, I want to listen to it for myself, you know, and you know, and I'm saying, yes, she lost her loved one, and a lot of it, I try to give people the benefit of the doubt in a lot of cases, probably more times than I should, you know, but once you get past the grieving process, you know, you have to, you know, kind of, you know, your vision, your perspective things, you know, needs to clear up, and like I said, this case right here, I think it's just a frivolous lawsuit trying to get 15 seconds of fame. Okay, there I said, I'm going to quit playing and say, that's my personal thing. I could be totally wrong, and if I am, I will go back and apologize, maybe, but, you know, just from what she's posting, what I've heard from her speaking on the podcast, so it wasn't, you know, nothing that, you know, grapevine stuff. It's all, you know, a way to get, you know, get to 15 seconds, 15 minutes of fame. That's what she's doing, in my opinion.
Alrighty, I also want to kind of get your opinion on the Mid-South Coliseum, and I don't know a whole lot about this. I saw that there's a petition online to save it. What's going on with Mid-South Coliseum?
Okay, we'll take you down, and for those who listen to this that don't know or are familiar with, you know, Memphis wrestling from back in the day, it was supposedly, you know, the Mecca professional wrestling in this area, and the first time that I ever, you know, went to wrestling was the Mid-South Coliseum with my late grandfather. Now, over the years, you know, Memphis has changed. I can't necessarily say progress. You know, we opened up the Great American Pyramid, you know, and so that was going to kind of like, you know, be, you know, a tourist attraction, you know, because it's sitting right on the Mississippi River. come see it. Wow, you're like at a pyramid sitting out there, you know. Then along comes the Forum downtown. I can't think of a proper name for it, because no, FedEx Forum, that's what they call it, I'm sorry. Anyway, so then that's when, and we got that shortly after we got the Grizzlies to come here from Vancouver. And so Memphis, number one, they built the pyramid. I can kind of understand that, okay, you know, time was ticking on the Coliseum, but you know, but basically the Coliseum was still functional and they still utilized it. When, like, we had like the fair to come in, with the Mid-South Fair sits on the, well, what used to be known as the fairgrounds. You know, we still had the fair going on, but then you still had the pyramid right on the Mississippi River. So then, when the Grizzlies come in, the city of Memphis made some kind of deal with them. Okay, well, hey, we're going to build a forum here, and that was kind of like the sweetening pot for the Grizzlies to come here. Now, mind you, that the pyramid here in Memphis, the city still wasn't paying for the pyramid. You know, and even as of, well, I think now it's probably paid for because Bass Pro Shop ended up buying the pyramid. And they're going to do some kind of tourist track, some kind of, I think, amusement park on the inside of the pyramid now. But even after the boom was up, you know, the pyramid set up for a couple of years. So now, the Mid-South Coliseum for years has been nothing but a big storage place. That's all it is now. They just store things and there are no events, because when the Forum came, they had a deal, and I don't know exactly how to word it, but it's basically kind of like a first refusal clause. So any kind of concerts or any kind of sporting events that come to Memphis, the people who are over the Forum, and maybe, I don't want to say agree, but I know the people who are at least over the Forum or something like that, they have first refusal, so you have to go through them first. Then it's a whole lot of red tape with that, you know, so basically, if the Forum don't want it, it really can't, you know, within certain, within reason, it can't go anywhere else in Memphis. Mm-hmm. Now, we have smaller venues that seat maybe like a couple of hundred, something like that. So that's where a lot of artists, they'll go, what we call the Cook Convention Center, or we'll call it the Cannon Center. And that seats maybe like a couple of hundred. I guess so that's where a lot of, like, I think R. Kelly's gone there, and a lot of comedians have gone there in the past. So now, what we don't get as far as concerts, and I know we're kind of the long way around, but I'm coming to a conclusion on this. So now a lot of places, they skip over Memphis, and they'll go to right across the state line to South Haven, and go to the Landis Center, which seats roughly around 5,000, because they don't have to go through all the red tape that they would have to do with the Coliseum, mm-hmm. and with the Forum. Now, as far as, you know, people now are trying to say, save, you know, the Coliseum, make it a pro wrestling Hall of Fame, which I think is a very stupid idea, and I know I'm going to get a lot of backlash on this, but I don't care, because of the fact Memphis has enough financial problems as it is, you know, and even with the Forum, I guess it seemed like a good idea to, you know, for, you know, to sweeten the pot to keep the Grizzlies here. Then, which, mind you, the Grizzlies, after a couple years of being here, they were in talks of leaving Memphis. So we would have had three arenas sitting up that we can't do anything with, you know, other than college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and concerts, you know, here and there. But for the most part, you would have three arenas just sitting up that we couldn't do anything with. But they straightened that out. So, anyway, so, you know, and if this, you know, if Memphis has so much stuff here, they built something else down on the river called Bill Street Landing, which it was supposed to be a tourist attraction. You know, which I think was a bad idea, to look good on paper. But Memphis financially is always, you know, off and on in the red. So why would you put, you know, add something else here that, you know, that the city's gonna have to end up paying for? You know, originally we weren't supposed to pay for the Forum, but they end up throwing another tax on the tail end of some of on our tax that we put on our cars, what they say is for something else, but it jumps up like $20-$30 from one year to the next. So we basically paid for the Forum. Okay, so now, you know, everybody, and I understand from a sentimental value, I mean, even with me, you know, that's the first place, you know, that was the Madison Square Garden of the South back in the day, so I understand it from that aspect. And as a wrestler, I understand the sentimental value of that, and I know a lot of guys who were there when it packed, I think it was 11,500, that was the number that they, you know, brag on every week. You know, guys like, you know, the Rock on Stress, you know, Lawler, Dundee, Brickhouse, the Moondogs on them, but I look you know, they got to pay staff, keep it running, got to pay electricity, upkeep, and all that. Then the city's already told, they're struggling with money, with paying the cops, you know, paying for, you know, the local school system. You know, that money could go to somewhere else that's better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, personally, I think they should tear it down because that's Memphis problem anyway. You live so much in the past. So this isn't me talking as bitter poker face or anything like that, because of course that's how it's going to come across, but, you know, everybody decides their opinion. But tear it down, you know, unless, only exception that unless somebody, a private owner, takes it up. Then, if you think about that, if you do make turn into a Hall of Fame, you got to look at it like, you know, it's a big building. You know, so what are you going to put in there to fill it up? You know, you have a new generation of wrestling fans now. So, you know, you can put guys like Spud and Roll, Billy Wicks, was it Al Green? I think that was one of the wrestlers. And one of them was Don Green or whatnot. And the Jarrett and Eddie Marlin. And you can put a lot of that in there. And unless you're an old school wrestling fan, you're not going to know who those people are. And initially, if they were to start a wrestling Hall of Fame here, it'll do good for the first couple of months. And after that, they're going to be struggling for money because people are going to stop coming. That's just typical Memphis. I've been in Memphis pretty much all of my life, so I know how things go. You know, they get the initial buzz, you know, and get good news coverage here. But after a couple of months, it's going to die. Then they're going to be like, okay, they're going to start up if it's the same, the Hall of Fame or whatnot. So why even, you know, it's time to let it go.
Let it go.
You know, and I'm all about respecting, you know, the history of this business and all, and it's not me disrespecting, you know, the vendors that I'm still in contact with, but, you know, sometimes you have to let the past go to move forward, and that's what I think they should do. So, in my personal opinion, to answer your question, tear the damn thing down.
One more thing to pick your brain about. Rikishi is one of the inductees into the Class of 2015 Hall of Fame. Right now, we know that Macho Man Randy Savage, of course, headlining, along with celebrity inductee Arnold Schwarzenegger. What is your overall opinion of the Hall of Fame?
With me in this awards period, I mean, maybe it needs a little something, you know, like right then and there for the WWE, as far as, you know, people tuning into that, you know, and the night before WrestleMania is, you know, it is something. I think it's probably more so for the fans, because me with any awards, and I even say this, and I think as a recent the Grammys were on, you know, to me, an honor is, you know, it's for the most part, it means nothing. Now, if they'll have, you know, like, you know, they have the respect of my co-wrestlers, yes, that means a lot, but that's not the end all with me. You know, you have music artists that probably never get, I mean, or you look at the, say, for instance, like movie actors that never get an Oscar. I mean, but long, you know, if they're getting 20, you know, if I was getting 20 million a picture and I never received an Oscar, I really wouldn't care. You know, that's just me. You know, it's all about, you know, okay, can I make the house payments? As far as the WWE Hall of Fame, on the outside looking in, I would say it probably wouldn't, you know, mean anything other than, you know, what happens is that night, but then, to me, after that, after you get your honor, you know, they honor you, you say your speech or whatever, you know, then what does it mean?
Sure.
That, I mean, that is me, or, you know, but it can also be too. Now, if you're like a life, let me backpedal a little bit. Now, if you're like a lifelong employee of the company, you know, say like Shawn Michaels, you know, that's a way of just, like, hey, you know, look, all these years we appreciate you. Or when they did it for Howard Finkel, they did it for Mean Gene, even Hogan. That's a little bit different. But, you know, somebody like, you know, say they're doing it for Arnold, I mean, really, what does that mean?
Right.
And they did it for Pete Rose, really, what does that mean? You know, I'm pretty sure Pete Rose would rather go into the Baseball Hall of Fame versus the WWE Hall of Fame.
Sure.
You know, so me, has some, I mean, it is me personally, that's what that means, absolutely nothing to me. You know, it's all about, you know, if I get the fans, they want what the fans remember me, because, you know, Hall of Fame, you know, the mirror of that to go and come, but it's the legacy I left for, you know, me delivering, you know, night in, night out. That's, to me, that's a better legacy to live than this, you know, an award for one night.
Very well said. Do you have any kind of winding down? Do you have anything coming up that you want to get out there? I know your Twitter handle is at Pokerface Events, and you're also on Facebook as well. Anything coming up though that you want to get out there for folks to come out and see?
Well, Well, you know, about a year ago I started my company, Poker Face Events, and I have to really stress to the so-called promoters in this area that I'm not a wrestling promoter. I'm an events promoter that so happens to promote wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've done two shows. I did a show almost a year ago, March of last year. I did my first wrestling event. Then this past December, I did my second. Right now, I'm in the stages of doing the second annual. The first event I did was called Millington Mayhem, which was the city of Millington, Tennessee hosted. So I'm trying to make that an annual event. So now I'm in the process of doing Millington Mayhem 2.0. That's in the plans right now. I just been kind of scatterbrained the last couple months, so now it's like time for me to buckle down. And the whole point of me running the wrestling events is to get the guys around here, because, you know, for years I thought, I knew that I was slighted due to political reasons and I wasn't, you know, in good with this guy or that guy. So what I do for the wrestling end of my business, guys who are like me, who deserve the chance, or who are great in the ring, I try to, and I'm actually a promoter. I don't just rent a ring, but I do TV commercials. I do newspaper ads. You know, I try to promote it on the radio and on television news programs if I can. You know, I've even, you know, gotten ideas from you when you wrestled last couple years back against Mike Masters at the AAPW show. I mean, so, you know, I'm an actual promoter.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I know, like I said earlier, you know, you follow me on Facebook, you see, I've even, you know, I have no problem plugging, you know, and promoting, you know, what it is that I'm doing, and so hopefully, you know, pick up some steam to where I do, you know, at least, you know, 3 or 4 events, wrestling events a year, and get the guys who I feel deserve it, and I'll build my following as a company up, and so they'll be able to compete, you know, with, you know, a couple thousand, you know, people and fans in attendance. Now, so hopefully, and I'm looking at May, I want to do it before school's out, so hopefully May I will have a Millington 2.0 up and running. I've already been talking to my guys, you know, and a lot of guys that I had wrestled with me the last 2 events, so they're ready to go. They're just ready for the thumbs up from me, you know, let them know, hey, you know, get your stuff ready, hey, we're going to be doing this and doing that. So that's what I'm planning on now, but I have some bigger things. I had something gigantic on the books last year, and it didn't work out quite how I wanted it, but I'm very stubborn, as you can see from some of my videos, so I'm going to, you know, I got to regroup, you know, just erase everything and start from scratch, but I got some bigger and better plans when it comes to wrestling and just events in general, so be on the lookout.
Alrighty, we certainly will. At Pokerface Events on Twitter, you can also look him up on Facebook as well, under Poker Face. Always a pleasure talking to you. I love following your post, and I will definitely update fans at my123cents.com about upcoming events with Poker Face Events. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Ken.
Yep, have a great day. There you have it, folks. That was Poker Face joining us on the podcast, and as always, a pleasure talking with him and really getting the word out about independent wrestling, because that is the cornerstone, the foundation, if you will, for the bigger picture, the WWE or Ring of Honor or TNA or Lucha Underground, Chikara Pro, whatever it is, you know, even on the smaller levels, it's important to get out there and support these events. And as I promised, when we hear more from Poker Face, we will certainly share that with you, because he is a quality person, and I enjoy watching him wrestle, and I am proud to say that I do know him on a personal level as well. So, again, my thanks to Quentin Williams, Poker Face, for joining us today, and I want to thank you for downloading and listening to My 123 Cents.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.